Okay, you ready?
You're listening to Design Yourself, a podcast to help you figure out what it is that you want and then make it happen. I'm Sharon Lepofsky. Don't you forget, this is my life and it's gonna
be good. Don't you know? Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 46 of Design Yourself. I am your host, Sharon. And today it is my distinct pleasure and honor to introduce you to one of my six awesome siblings. So this is the first time I've had one of my siblings on the show. And today you get to meet the lovely, the fabulous, the one and only Phyllis Jean Lepofsky. So Philly is awesome. Fun fact about Philly and I, she and I share we're practically birthday twins. Our birthdays are back to back on the calendar. And the only downside to this is the fact that my mom had to miss my birthday party when I turned 5, which was at McDonald's, you know, stacking the styrofoam, Big Mac containers and things like that. It was very fun, but mom wasn't there because she was still in the hospital with newborn Philly. I'm mostly over that now. But really, I'm just so happy for you guys to get a flavor for Philly and what she's about. She and I talk on today's episode really about two things. One, teaching. Philly's been teaching herself for almost a decade, so we'll get a little bit of a sense of how she wended her way into that career path and some of the things she's learned along the way there. And then she and I talk about transitions. And I thought there was no better person to come on for this topic right now than Philly, because she is about to embark on her partnership with her soon-to-be husband. So she'll be getting married later this summer. And I wanted to make sure that we brought her perspective in and really thought about what are some tips and ideas for how to work your way through transitions in a way that feels good. Philly actually approached me about doing this topic as a solo show, and I said, this is a great idea, and you're going to help me do it. So together, she and I came up with several tips, all of which are laid out in the show notes for you guys. So if you head over to pointroadstudios.com/podcast, you can get access to today's show notes and all show notes for all the previous episodes. So anyway, the last thing I want to say about Philly before we dive in is that she is really one of those people who just seems to have a never-ending source of just kindness and ability to give. So she really is someone that I admire for how she's able to continue to put others in the place where she's focusing and looking to see how she can care for them. And one of the things that comes out through today's episode is how she herself focuses on being strong. And you know, wasn't the focus of today's episode, but that was a big learning for me is, yeah, you know, if you are going to be giving in that way, you've got to make sure that you're starting with yourself. So anyway, lots more to come. Let us go to the show and meet Philly. I am really excited to have you on the podcast today, Phyllis.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thanks for being here. I feel as though I should paint a picture for listeners. This is the first time I've ever recorded in this setup before. I am in a guest bedroom in my parents' house on a queen-size bed, curled up like it's, you know, a slumber party with my sister. So it kind of feels fun. And also probably one of the more unusual places that I've recorded. So thank you for your flexibility, literally, as we sit here cross-legged. So I want to kick us off today by, Philly, having you describe to our listeners, what is it that you do professionally?
Well, professionally, I am a high school English teacher. I've been teaching for 9 years, all at the same school. And just the same old thing with different kids year after year.
So as a high school English teacher, what are some of the books that you're teaching?
I teach a British literature survey course where we cover everything in air quotes, from Beowulf as like the earliest English literature through to more contemporary literature like Brave New World. Mm-hmm. And then I teach a 9th grade survey course that's about the coming of age novel. And we read some of the greatest hits you would expect to read in school, like Romeo and Juliet, and Great Expectations, My Antonia, things like that.
Okay, very cool. So I promise this will not be all me asking you questions about books, but now my inner English major is really curious. So what is the, and it could be a poem or a book or a play, anything, but what did you read in high school that you still most remember today?
Oh, I actually have an answer to that. And I don't really remember all the details of the novel, but it's still like my favorite, just like, wow, that was such a cool book. And it's 1984 by George Orwell. I loved reading that in 10th grade.
Well, so what did you love about it?
I think I loved partially the way it had been structured in the class. We read Brave New World for our summer reading, so we started with this kind of dystopian literature. And then we did basically the class I described that I teach now myself, and we did Beowulf and Frankenstein and all the classic Britlit things. And then we ended the year with 1984, and we looked at how we got from, like, one dystopian novel to the other. And I just like thinking about that idea of Big Brother. It felt relevant in 2002 when I read it, and it still definitely feels relevant. It was just interesting, different from a lot of what I had read.
So fascinating. So I remember reading 1984. I'm trying to think of, I don't think we read A Brave New World. What would be something else? Animal Farm. We read Animal Farm around the same time. So I think that was our dystopian lit section. But I did not like it. But it was, that was ninth grade, where we also got to read things like The Great Gatsby, which I loved. Silas Marner, maybe a little less.
I've never read that.
Awesome. But, okay. So you loved 1984. Excellent. And then in terms of teaching now, do you have, it, maybe it changes, or do you have, like, do you have a favorite thing that you teach?
To teach? My favorite thing to teach in ninth grade, personally, is Great Expectations, which is another book I read in 10th grade in that same Brit Lit class. And I really loved then, and I still love. I think it's the sweetest story, and that Joe Gargery is the kindest character in literature. But my students really don't like it, so it's not as fun to teach to them. I don't think they can get past that it's 500 pages long, most of them.
Yeah.
And also, it's hard for them, and this is with all the books that we teach in that class, to respond to a story about the experience of growing up when they haven't grown up.
Yeah.
So sometimes they'll say that, oh, my mom's reading this along with me and she really likes it, or something like that. And it, I think that shows part of the issue.
So what, I literally have no idea where you would go with this, but like, what do you feel like is the mark that somebody has grown up? I feel as though this would be helpful for people that I know in my
I have no idea when someone has grown up. I just think when you've had one thing, like with Great Expectations, part of it's about like young love and things like that. When you have enough distance between the time that you spent in those formative years and those actual years to look back on them and to not feel everything maybe so viscerally, or to see it in a more logical manner. I know that at 31, I sure don't feel grown up, but I can look back on my childhood and see it in a different way than I could have. If these kids are 14 and 15 years old.
Yeah.
They're also extremely self-absorbed by nature of being adolescents. So all of that, not that they don't connect with parts of it, but the whole of it, the parts that I like so much about it, are difficult for them to grasp.
Yeah. I feel like that's always the mark of a truly excellent novel, is you can come back and experience it through the ages in different ways. It's actually rare that there are things that I want to go back and reread, which maybe is a flaw as an English major, but
you got to consume more and more and more. Don't have time to go back to the other ones.
Yeah. The part of the reason I was intrigued by it, was actually kind of going at exactly what you said, is I feel like one of the things that I come across working with people who are maybe in transition on, is this the career I want to be in, or what is it that I really want? And I, you know, I always think that is a constant evolution, you know, like I think sometimes we think the mark of growing up when we're young is, oh, you like find a job, you know what you're doing, you're on it, like you've answered all the questions. And I love your definition. I actually think you had quite a good one, which I think it, in some ways at its core is this ability to remove yourself and have like an awareness of the experience with a little bit of distance, which I think sometimes as adolescents, we're so in it.
Mm-hmm, definitely so in it.
Not that that goes away completely as we grow up or that there's like a year where that changes, but... But as an adolescent, I can certainly remember my 15-year-old self being very self-absorbed. So, well, interesting. Well, so tell us, how did you land as a teacher? Like, was this the thing that you knew, I'm destined to be a teacher, or how did that happen for you?
Well, as you know, our parents are teachers by trade.
What? We have the same parents?
Yeah. And so it was one of those things where you kind of grow up mimicking what you see. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I can remember being in my later childhood, fourth or fifth grade, and realizing that other children's parents worked during the summer, that, like, everyone didn't have summer vacation. I was just... didn't think of a lot of jobs besides teaching.
Yeah.
And as I actually got older and was able to think about what I wanted to do, that was still on my mind. And I had a really great ninth grade English teacher, the kind of story you hear all the time, the really dedicated teacher who inspired you and all of those things. And so that had it more so on my mind. And as I went through high school and continued enjoying to read and write, and I was good at reading and writing,
mm-hmm.
I ended up applying for a scholarship to Boston University that was education school specific. And when I won that scholarship, I thought, all right, I'll do it. But it was a long time through that whole program, really till the time I was about to graduate, before I was sure whether I could actually do it. If I could make it as a teacher.
Wow. What, was there like a certain resistance or question that you had specifically around, would you make it as a teacher?
No, I knew I wanted to teach and I had like the on paper skills to be a teacher, but it's really, you can do theory, theory, theory all you want, but until you're actually in front of the room doing it, you're not sure if you're going to enjoy it or if you're going to be successful at it. And if you're in early childhood education, it's not as challenging to get the experience because a preschool classroom, a kindergarten classroom, a first grade classroom will have you in as an 18 or 19-year-old to mm-hmm. work as an aide. But a high school classroom with 17 and 18-year-olds is not having you in as an aide. So it wasn't until I student taught the first semester of my senior year that I actually had the experience of what it would be like.
Mm-hmm.
Doing what I was in theory preparing to do.
Yeah.
So I tried to allow for that. I was in that BS program, not BS, but Bachelor of Science program
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
For English education, but I could keep my scholarship and still co-enroll in the College of Arts and Sciences and get an English degree. And I felt strongly about getting that BA so that I wouldn't just have like a trade school kind of degree.
Yeah.
Even though I really hoped to teach and have got a teaching job immediately and am working that same job, I felt strongly about having both.
Yeah. Smart. And I can, you know, as somebody who did not get a scholarship, and I'm glad you brought it up, although I will just say it for you. This was like a full ride scholarship. So it would have been something really hard, I imagine, to turn down. So super impressive. And I always looked at the fact that you did that as, wow, you had this really practical skill, you know, having come out of a liberal arts program at Kenyon College, which I loved. I mean, I feel a lot of Kenyon pride. Go ladies and lords. but I do think that I think there's something enviable about having the practical experience, too.
Mm-hmm. So that's great. I enjoyed having all of that practical experience. But when you're not sure it's what you're going to do,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of intimidating to graduate and be like, well, I went to college. Oops, I don't want to do that anymore. But I know several people who went through my same program who then went to law school or have worked in business and not, I don't think, taught a day
Oh, interesting.
In school.
Yeah. So now you have been out there teaching, doing the practical side of this for
the
9 years.
Work, that's right. We'll call it.
Yeah. Well, as it truly is. What have you noticed in terms of things that have changed, whether in your own teaching or just among students, the approach? Because you've been doing it for almost a decade now.
It's hard to answer that question without making myself sound old and whiny, I guess. One thing I've noticed is in myself, when I first started and I was 22 and my students were 15 and 16, it drove me crazy when they said, we're like the same age. I said, imagine when you were 8 years younger and what was that like? We're not the same age. But in a lot of ways, we had the same childhood experiences. I knew what shows they had grown up watching. They were the same age as our younger sister, Julia. It was all very familiar and it was easier to connect with them in that way. Mm-hmm. And now I'm noticeably older. I don't know their childhood references at all. And even in just 9 years of teaching, because they're so young, the way that age difference has kind of grown with me, I guess, as I've gotten older and they've stayed the same age.
Yeah, there's a famous Dazed and Confused quote about that.
Not in that way, is what I don't think is where I'm going with this, but yes. That the way I connect with them, not that I don't connect or that I don't engage with them, but the tricks and the things that I pull out are different. We just hired a member of our department I'm really excited about who's fresh out of college, and I taught when she was in 10th grade.
Oh, wow.
And when we made the decision to, well, it wasn't entirely our choice, but when we were talking about, okay, is this who we want to put forward as a candidate, I thought, yeah, but I'm not going to be the young, cute one anymore.
Yeah.
Because everyone else at my school, especially in my department, is more established, older, more seasoned than I am.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my shtick. So having to evolve how you engage with the students and how you put yourself forth. In terms of what the students have changed, I have seen a big difference with technology, but it's hard to go too far down that rabbit hole without sounding like a grouchy old person.
Great self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Good. All right. Well, I'm ever fascinated. The other thing I was curious about here, and this I'll provide a little bit of context for those of you listening. You know, I heard you, Philly, talking about how becoming a teacher was the thing that you knew, because that's what you heard from, you know, that's what our dad did. Our mom, who spent a lot of time being, as I thought of it, the CEO of our very busy household.
Yeah, that was a tough gig.
But when she was working, quote unquote, out of the house, where they gave her a paycheck, she was often doing various teaching jobs, whether subbing or teaching women who were pregnant in high school, so were at the end of their pregnancy or just had a baby and were trying to get back acclimated. So all kinds of things. But teaching was the core thing that both of our parents were doing. And I, like you, found myself always thinking about my career in terms of teaching. And even though my, you know, I had one fellowship year where I was teaching in Germany, but nothing like, you know, what I would say is the real labor of being a teacher in a classroom where that's your full-time job. For example, I didn't grade, so I know I don't really get teaching street cred.
Well, that is part of it. But the classroom work is its own challenge and reward.
Yeah.
Also.
But which I would say I really, that's the part, I loved that. And I found myself, you know, when I was working in sales, when I was, you know, as somebody who's doing coaching or now, you know, teaching leadership development to adult classrooms, I'm always thinking in terms of my job is in some ways to teach. Like the teaching part feels core, even if I'm not a quote unquote teacher. So anyway, all of this context is by way of saying, so I certainly felt that same pull that you were describing of like, this is what I know. And when I look among our siblings, you are not the only teacher. Our dad is still teaching. Mom is still working in a school, although not formally in the classroom. But we have our sister Maureen, taught for many years, now is working as an administrator. Our sister Julia is teaching art and coordinating art teaching. I'm sure even Alex and Elaine would be thinking about ways that they're teaching in their jobs, although are certainly
and
not
teaching their children. I mean, there's so many ways that the skills of a teacher, or having seen that modeling growing up, then are applied out.
So what I'm wondering for you is, do you ever think about what makes you uniquely you as a teacher? Whether it's, I mean, I know I for myself, I'm always thinking that coming from such a big family, like, what's uniquely me in this? But I wondered if that ever came up for you with teaching, whether tied to the family, like, here's how I'm a teacher that's different than my family, or if you don't even think about that.
I had not really thought about what makes me different as a teacher from the rest of the family. I think about it sometimes at work. How is what I'm offering similar to or in line with what the department values, and how do I approach things in a slightly different way? But that's never competitive. Like, I want to distinguish myself from these people. It's more a recognition. And we, a lot of times as a teaching team in the department, talk to the kids about, well, you know, you might have gotten it in this way in so-and-so's class, and in this class we're going to do that same idea, but I approach it in this way, and try to talk to them so they see the intentionality behind some of it.
Yeah.
I guess in terms of distinguishing myself from the family, Maureen and Dad taught Latin. Mom taught English, but she hasn't for a long time in a traditional sense, so that's something that's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
I work at a different school, but it's all very much, I think, in line with what the family values have been.
Awesome. So I'm going to pivot us to outside of the classroom.
Uh-oh. And
my segue story, since I have one of the fun things of interviewing a sibling, Phyllis, is that I feel like I have fun stories I can integrate in. So,
oh, me too.
That part I'll be editing out for sure. No, but I'm happy to leave you space for a fun sharing story. But my one thing that I loved that you did, bringing your teaching into our family, was we have had traditions where Philly will stake out and bring home many copies of a specific Shakespeare play and bring them home. And then over the holidays, the family will perform the play. Now, it would usually be like a
reading.
Yes, a reading. We don't have stage movements and, you know,
sets,
costumes, etc. But what was one of the ones that we did?
We did Macbeth years ago.
Yes.
I think we did Twelfth Night.
Yeah, that feels right. Did we do King Lear or one of the Henrys?
I don't think we. King Lear would be a little too on the nose with the daughters vying for the father's attention. I'm not positive, though.
Okay. Maybe that was just my own real life feeling that that occurred. I feel so.
I'd love to know how you came out in the end.
Maybe we should put that in the queue.
Yeah.
We'll see who gets cast.
We have to wait for all the children to grow up enough to play a part.
Yeah, the next generation. Anyway, so these are the kinds of things you can see happening in the Lepofsky household if you were hanging out with us on the holidays, stewarded by you, Phyllis.
Yes.
But one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the podcast, in addition to being able to talk about your experience in the classroom, is because you have been a person who has raised a lot of interesting topic ideas for me, especially as I was launching the podcast. I would with deep appreciation get just short emails or texts saying, hey, I listened to this. Have you ever thought about doing a podcast on this topic? So there's been lots of good inspiration coming from you. And one of the things that you brought up many months ago, really early on in the podcast, was the topic of transitions.
Mm-hmm.
And really what I think of as a pretty unique lens that you were bringing to it is, you know, it's pretty common knowledge. People will talk about transitions can be tough. There's change involved. How do you move through that change? But you had brought it up specific to happy transitions and how even when you're going through a really happy transition, that brings with it its own set of challenges. And so I wanted to have you on here, not that I'm looking for, you know, any, you know, proofread answers to what this looks like, but just to be in a dialogue with you on that. And I thought you were a perfect person to have on now because you are about to embark on a major happy life transition, as the reason we are live in person together in Cincinnati is I came out here for your wedding shower. So Yay. You are about to get married. Hooray! In just a couple of months now, right?
Yeah, just a little bit over 2 months.
Dun, dun, dun. I mean, dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
So, with all of that as context, I'd love to just give you space to talk about, you know, when you kind of had this idea around transitions and happy transitions, just anything, like, how did you come up with that? Where did that come from for you?
Well, I brought the topic to you thinking you should do a solo show about it, giving some advice on how to navigate those happy transitions. I haven't gotten that advice yet, so...
that'll feel be like forthcoming episode.
Tables have been turned on me a little bit, but
welcome,
that's just something.
Welcome to working with a coach.
Yeah, so I guess that's like teaching for me too. But
exactly.
One of the reasons it had been on my mind is that, you know, I have a certain way that I do things, and I'm certainly in many ways a creature of habit. I've had my same teaching job at the same school for the last 9 years and my whole professional life. And there have been changes along the way in moving from this place to that place within Cincinnati and, you know, certainly starting to date Tim, my fiancé, and things like that that have been changing all along over the course of years. But when you get down to we're going to get married, merge our lives together, that's a really happy occasion, and I'm excited about it. But it's everyone's so happy for you and wanting you to, like, perform your happiness for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, how's everything? How are all your plans? And how's it going? But no one wants to talk to you about how to actually physically change your whole life and what that transition is like and to have the growing pains that go along with it. That's the part that you can't perform and that no one really wants to talk about. And yet it's a real stress as you prepare to make those changes and decisions.
Yeah. So I had not thought of this at all coming into this conversation, but I actually feel like we're both kind of in the midst of this and with a different happy transition.
Yeah, having a baby.
Yeah. So for me, being 9 weeks postpartum of little Iggy being born, It's a very similar, thing. It's wonderful. It's like so exciting. And, you know, when people throw it, less common with your third baby, but let's say like when you're having baby showers or wedding showers or people giving you advice and like even the advice is usually around, you know, how to get ready or maternity clothes or like it's not on the brass tacks.
The nitty gritty. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Here's what it's going to be to actually be in this new thing. It's about having a baby and getting married, not about being in a lifelong relationship, which is what's happening in both of our transitions in different ways. So anyway, maybe we'll be able to bounce off that as both of us stepping into it. I am wondering if we might together come up with some rules of the road. So maybe at the end we can circle back and say, so, all right, from where we've wended our way in our conversation, what are some of the tips that we could give?
Oh, wow. We get to do a list?
Yeah, I'm thinking, let's see if we can come up with a list.
All right. We don't have any paper and pencil to write on, so we'll see how our organization goes.
I do have some in this room if we feel inclined to get it, so we'll see where the spirit moves us.
Fair enough.
Okay, well, let me start by just asking you, when you think about what you kind of find yourself reaching for, like, is there something you wish you had as you're moving through this transition?
No one physical thing. I don't want to read a book, how to navigate this transition. I'm not looking for that kind of trite advice. I guess just a little bit more openness, and not that I feel like I haven't had it, but in many of my more superficial daily interactions, it's all about just, oh, the wedding and things like that, and not about how to change your whole routine and change your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So just the support in going through that process, I guess.
Yeah. It's almost like having a space, and I think this space could look really different. And I think part of it would be actually naming what the space is that you want, but having a space where you can talk about it on a real level, like talk about it beyond the superficial, mm-hmm. that dialogue is really important.
Yes.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, for those of you who've been listening to the podcast, you may have heard me rave about this book all around, you know, taking your 40 days pause, which I did, being pregnant. One of the rituals that they recommended leading up to having a baby is, you know, to have your friends come. So think of not a shower, but this is, they're like sitting around you in a circle and they're all like, you know, praising you or giving, there was like various things. And I read this ritual thing and was like, there is no way I would do that. And I like the mystical and the magical and like things that could be termed woo-woo, even though I do not like that term, but all of that is all good by me. But that ritual that she was describing did not feel good. But mm-hmm. if I think about being able to have one-on-one conversations with, you know, certain very close friends, that's a dialogue that's important. When I talk about coming back into work, being able to have real conversations with the people that I'm working with, so my clients, that I can actually have a, hey, I'm willing to come back and do this work and I want to be in this work, but here's the flexibility I'm going to need for this period of time, like to really be able to talk about it in a way that acknowledges a whole person. Like mm-hmm. those are things that help me. So I'm brainstorming a lot and would love you to build from here, Philly, but like the kinds of things that I think are important and that are, as you were bringing up, like having the space to be real.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like I have that in with Tim and with my close friends and family members. It's not that I haven't been able to express those feelings or that mm-hmm. I feel like I have to fake it.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels in a larger sense that that's where the kind of external expectations are. When people think of someone as a bride.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm liking that distinction. So almost a, you know, you want to have the space, but then also, so one thing is you want to create a space for that real conversation. It's almost like you want to be able to contain the performing part of it.
Yes.
So like one needs the expansiveness and the other needs like more, like mm-hmm. where's the box that you can put it into. And I think that too probably is, and again, muse with me here, but I think that is really dependent on the person. Like some people are like everybody's box. So really everybody has a different shape box for how they want to contain this transition that they're going through. I feel like in some ways, like a precursor to like the space creation and the containment of the transition in itself, like what do you want to create space for and what do you want to contain, is really being clear on what you want out of this transition. I mean, I like especially something like marriage, like, well, let's not even say marriage, getting married, because that's the transition, mm-hmm. like that's the act, or having a baby, that's the act that creates this transition. Mm-hmm. But like in this pregnancy, I created a new transitional space, which I hadn't thought about before, which is the 40 days after you have the baby. But to really name, like, what do you want out of this transition? That feels like that might be helpful.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that as, like, when I approached you about this topic months ago, I feel in a different place now
yeah.
than I did then, because I've worked through a lot of the things that were kind of eating at me or bothering me, a lot of the big planning that was suddenly taking up my time and making it harder to manage all the other parts of my routine.
Mm-hmm.
That's finished. And I've had time then with that done to focus on, okay, because all I can control is myself, which maybe that's one of our reminders.
Yeah, yeah, no. That's a good one.
Is to work on the things that I want to work on, to enter, to go beyond getting married now that I've done that work and enter into a marriage.
Yeah. Do you feel like in some ways the shift that you've been in is moving, like moving from, well, actually, let me just ask you, because I'm having my own intuition of what I think it might be, but let me just ask you, because you referenced you notice that things are different today from where they were, like even when you first brought this topic up to me a few months ago, like what do you notice has changed? Like what's the progression that when you kind of look at yourself has occurred?
Well, I feel a little bit more comfortable with what's happening, a little bit more in control of the fact that I am getting married. There's a plan for it. It's not like this hypothetical idea. And I have carved out some of the space that I need. Part of what was making the transition difficult is just having a lot more demands on my time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to have that happen all of a sudden is challenging, but I found different ways to work. Like, I might not sit down now. Grading is one thing that comes to mind. And grade papers all day Saturday because I have X, Y, and Z other things that are now kind of demanding my attention. But instead, I make a more concerted effort to grade a little bit at a time, or I become okay with handing something back with a 3-week turnaround for essays instead of a 2-week turnaround for essays, just to give myself more space and freedom, changing some of my expectations I put on myself. No one's saying this is how it has to be done. It's just how I've always done it.
Yeah.
And now I'm starting to adapt some of those routines.
Mm-hmm. Super smart. Because you've been in this and have seen some things working for yourself, like, are there any words of wisdom you would pass along to other brides? Because you're in this specific transition, knowing that you're still very much in it, but just anything that you feel like you've learned that's been really helpful for you.
I kind of have to roll my eyes at the idea of giving advice to other brides. That makes me feel like I'm going to be in a magazine or something talking about, oh, you should use these, like, billion-dollar chargers for your plates. They're going to, like, make your whole event. That kind of thing doesn't really resonate with me. But if I had to give advice, it would be what I had said before, to focus on yourself. You can only control how you respond to things. You can only do and change what you do and change. And so to focus on preparing yourself to not only, you know, have a great party or whatever is important to you about that day.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been trying to reframe my thoughts into what do I want to, I've been saying, get right about myself before I merge my life with someone else's. What are the things I want to have done that I haven't done? What,
mm-hmm.
you know, is there a physical achievement? I think a lot about running because I like to run. How can I make myself stronger? Mm-hmm. Not for like a vanity perspective, but I really want to be fit and healthy to partner with someone for a long life, those kind of things.
Oh, yeah.
That has been more fun for me thinking of those things than it has been like picking up the charger at the table.
Yeah. I love that. And so, like, I always find this in when people have these questions that emerge for themselves, they're always the best questions. So when you're holding the questions, like you just said, of like, so like, what is it that I want to have done for myself? Or what do I like, what's the thing related to like being strong? Like where are you at with those questions? What has emerged for you?
Like, have I become strong?
Or, like, have you found you've adapted a new routine? Did you hit, like, a strength training test that you were working towards?
I've just been, well, like, with that, learning new things at the gym, things I hadn't done before, maybe I won't have time to do when I'm married or starting a family. And so learning how to take care of my body in ways that I know are really helpful. Like, I've always just liked running, and so I haven't liked lifting weights, but now I've learned a routine that I think is fun and that I enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm self-competitive, so I don't really very often compare myself physically or intellectually or whatever with other people, but I like to beat my own goals. Mm-hmm. So it's been really gratifying. Look, I'm improving. I can lift heavier weights, or I can go that much further or faster.
Mm-hmm.
And I've enjoyed kind of tracking that progress as a different measurement.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. The one thing that it's sparking for me is when I think about transitions writ large, and that could be for really positive transitions or ones that are tough, I think one of the things I'm often looking to do for myself or encouraging for my clients is to really think about the emotional state that is going to serve you in this transition. And like part of that is naming, like, what emotion is going to serve me as I move through this. Like, as an example, when somebody is feeling really like, how would they ever leave their job? Because this, as is really frequently the case, people see themselves as like one step away from being on the street and destitute, and their families are destitute and they've lost the roof over their head. So there's like a lot of fear and uncertainty and like the lack of stability that shows up. So the emotion that they really want is to feel brave or to feel bold. Like if they could cultivate that, that would steward them and actually taking the leap of stepping into the next thing. And when you were describing like wanting to be really strong, mm-hmm. I've never heard, I mean, I think it's a really poetic way to think about stepping into a marriage. And I personally haven't heard somebody talk about it in that way of like, I'm being strong to go into the marriage strong. And even in your running example, I mean, marriage is, I don't know, whatever,
an ultra marathon.
Yes. It was like, what are those crazy things that people do where they're running a bazillion miles? Yeah, exactly. It's one of those. And, you know, I don't think of, I mean, strong could theoretically be an emotion, but there's something about it that crosses from, you know, a heart or emotional state into a physical state as mm-hmm. well, and mental state as well, that I really like that. So I don't know if, I don't know what the word would be for something that encompasses all of those things.
I'm trying to think about it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, well, this is not an emotion either, yeah. But as you were kind of talking back to me with my own words, I was thinking of being, like, I want to feel, like, really self-sufficient so yeah. that I feel like I have all my things in control and that I can open myself up to an ultra-marathon partnership.
Yeah.
As an emotion, it's not really the same as, like, it's involved bravery, like mm-hmm. you were saying,
mm-hmm.
but it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Have to be bold and calm at the same mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, and it's almost like, I'm thinking now for myself of in like the transition of becoming a parent and having a new life, there's like a vulnerability.
Yeah.
That it's like you want to be strong and at the same time be vulnerable. I want to be strong and at the same time vulnerable. But the thing I will say is, you know, if an emotion emerges for you, or if, you know, holding those two serves you, hold them. But what I liked about your word strong, and like this is the word I'm trying to think of, is that strong is an emotion, and it's beyond an emotion. It's that physical, it's the mental,
mm-hmm.
and it's the emotional. And I've never before thought about, like, I don't know, it's like a state. It's not just an emotion that I like.
Or it's
like
an umbrella term that you can have all those emotions within being strong. If you feel strong, then you can really navigate all the other emotions that you're going yeah. to encounter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the umbrella state. Mm-hmm. And I think like strong could be an umbrella state. Self-sufficient could be an mm-hmm. umbrella state. So anyway, I like that. You're giving me new ideas as you're saying these
I'm
things.
Trying.
Well done. I'm curious, as you're moving through this transition, what are you most excited about?
I'm excited. I feel nervous about the wedding itself and all the attention that will come with that day. But I'm excited for the marriage. I think that Tim and I make a really good team, that we're good partners with each other. And so I'm just excited to see what kind of other adventures will unfold.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm sure I'll be navigating the same
mm-hmm.
tension of, oh, everyone wants me to be acting a certain way or excited about a certain thing. Mm-hmm. I just like being able to have the open dialogue.
Yeah.
But I'm excited about all of the new adventures that will unfold.
Mm-hmm. And as you kind of think about just noticing for yourself, and even seeing you physically as you're describing it, like your body posture changed when you were talking about what you were excited about, like mm-hmm. shoulders went upright, like you kind of opened up in the chest, like there's what I would intuit as like a
strong.
Yeah, strong. Yes, a strong posture. Look at that strong posture that you assumed when you were describing what you're excited about. Is there any advice or things that you think you would give for people kind of noticing that in yourself as we, again, as we're trying to think about what would be good tips for other people?
Can you reframe that?
Yeah, sure. And actually, I'll just run it for a minute of what I was observing, and then maybe you can build from that or agree, disagree, revise. Okay. But seeing how you got how things changed so much when, just in the process of being asked, what are you excited about, was making me think about, you know, maybe one tip we could offer to people is when you're moving through a happy transition, like remember to hold that which is motivating you and inspiring you, making you excited about the transition. So like having some way to keep that present while, so kind of like at the same time, honoring that there's not going to be all the, that's not going to be a consistent, exciting feeling you have the whole time. So yes, there's going to be this fluxing of emotions. So hold the thing that makes you excited, not on a pedestal as like, this is the way I'm supposed to feel all the time, perform, perform, perform. Mm-hmm. But like, this is the thing that's motivating me to move through this transition. That's why I'm getting married. That's why I'm becoming a parent. That's why I'm moving to a new place. That's why I'm starting a new relationship, new job, like, you know, all of those happy transitions that can happen. And at the same time, honoring that you're not going to hold one thing through the whole time, and you will be up and you will be down and you'll bounce up again. But so there's something in like those two things that I'm thinking maybe is a helpful thing for people
like
to keep
that
in mind.
A lot. And I think too, if there are people like me listening that are more private or reserved, I would consider myself introverted. Mm-hmm. That's why the performance aspect of things wears me out or makes me feel overwhelmed. If you have that thing that you're keeping in mind that you're excited about and you don't like performing it with the whole public, it's still something fun, like to say, oh, we're getting married, or this is what our wedding is going to be like. I'd like to talk about that with Tim, and we can dream about, oh, what it's going to be like when we are married, or when we have kids, or when we travel to this or that new place. All of that's really fun, and it's the giddy excitement that people want you to have every day when you're at work and they're asking you about your wedding or something. Mm-hmm. But it's more my speed to be able to hold that in a more private space too.
Yeah, perfect. And I think, again, that gets back to what we were talking about of like knowing yourself. Mm-hmm. Knowing what you want out of it. But then I think also you've added in this new dimension of like, and knowing what you want out of it is also knowing yourself.
Right.
And that what you want may look very different from somebody else. And what you want in this moment might be different than what you wanted even 3 months ago.
Right.
So the thing is, things will change. That's the thing about transitions, is things will always be changing. And I have, man, somebody said this to me years ago and it always stuck with me. We so often think about transitions as this thing to like get from here to the thing that's on the other end as quickly as possible. But really, when you step back from, you know, a transition like what we're talking about of like getting married or having a baby, where there is like a day where there's
right.
where things are really changing. But really, we are in some state of transition, and usually many states of transition all the time. Our regular lives are usually more in flux than at a stagnant end mm-hmm. point. And so I think while we're talking about these as tips and tools to be thinking about through a major happy life transition, I think really that's a helpful lens because it's one that people don't often look at. But these are things that apply across the board to the mm-hmm. way we're living our lives all
day.
The time.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then it makes those other big transitions feel less overwhelming if you think of all those skills you have to work through them just day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. Ooh, and I like that of you've just added in of asking yourself, like, what skills do I have that are going to support me through this transition? Mm-hmm. I feel like that would be incredibly confidence building.
Because you're thinking, what's staying the same? What do I already do that I just need to keep doing to get through this situation?
Yeah. And then I think adding to that, what support do I need on something maybe that I don't have? Like, maybe there's a skill that I'm missing. Like, if I look back on my own wedding, I think a skill that I didn't have was dancing. Certainly not dancing in some, you know, big performative sense. I am an extrovert, just barely on that side of extrovert versus introverted. But I'm usually okay with being in front of big crowds. But I look back on having to do a first dance and think, rolling my eyes, why did I do that?
And you made us all dance in your bridal party. I know. I hated you for that. That was horrible.
That was probably the one thing that I would give myself credit for. I didn't want to be the center of attention on this skill that I don't really have for this entire period. So, you know, disperse that by having you guys do it. But I think if I were to think back on it now, I might have said to myself, okay, well, there's this thing that we have to do. Well, it was not like a major anxiety source for me, which is probably why I didn't think too much about it. But with the hindsight of, you know, nearly a decade later of having been, you know, from when I got married, I look back on that and I think to myself, maybe if I had identified that I don't have the skill of dancing, I could have either eliminated doing a first dance, like, you know, that's public and you know, the DJ calls it out and whatever, eliminated that, or have taken dance lessons because I decided that was going to be fun and done something where I felt I was building a sense of confidence and having that chance to be in that transition with my now husband, Colin. But anyway, I feel like naming the skills you have to move you through it, and also identifying where you're feeling like there's a gap or resistance to give you a chance to say, so where could I either get help to do this? Whether that's myself learning it, but then remembering you don't have to master everything. Maybe there are other people that could help you or other resources. I could have done YouTube dance lessons, maybe.
Yeah, probably. I haven't gotten anxious about that part yet, so that'll be a new thing to put on my list.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, I know that we are coming up towards the end of our time, but before I pivot us into just a couple last questions, anything else that you want to bring into the dialogue before we close on transitions?
I think I would just reiterate what you said before about thinking of all the daily transitions and how your life really is in flux a lot of the time, so that transitions don't feel so overwhelming. There's always going to be ones like having a baby or something that are jump out at you more, but if you just think of a lot of the time when you were talking, I kept thinking to myself, yeah, you just have to do you. Yeah. And if you can just think of that, you can navigate through and figure out what excites you. You can ask for the help and support you need and do some of those other things we had been discussing.
Mm-hmm. So I'm the phrase, you know, just do you is one that like is different than how I would think about it. So I'm wondering for you, when you think about, like, if you're doing you in just the way that you want to, like, what would that look like? I'm really looking for tips for myself. Like, if you're giving me advice, Sharon, just go do you. What do I have to do Sharon?
Think of the things that you like to do and then prioritize doing those things and don't do all the stuff that you're not excited about. Don't do the dance lessons. Just don't do the dance.
Yeah.
It's done. You're not excited about it. It's off the list.
Yeah. Do me. Do you. I like that.
You want to have this. No one else has that. And when you're having a baby, you want to do it this way, or you want to have your wedding party be like that. Just do it. Why not?
Do you.
Doesn't have to all be by the book. I say that, and I'm very traditional and like to do things exactly how they have been done, so I don't always follow that particular advice, but I do try to use that
good awareness
in how I navigate as much as I can.
Yeah, no, that's helpful, and it's helpful for me because even just in the way that you phrase that, I'm like, okay, like those are some questions I can ask myself. What do I like doing? Do that. What do I not want to do? Ask myself if there's some other way around it. So I like that. Very helpful. Okay, I will make sure in the show notes that I'm going back through and and listing out all of these ideas that have emerged through the course of
our list.
Yes, there'll be a list. Top seven. I don't know how many there are.
I'm guessing five, but we'll see if that.
I'm telling you,
true.
I don't set out to create like top five reasons why, top five tools for, but five is a frequent number that shows up for me. I have a feeling we did more, but we'll see. We'll see if I could subcategorize them into five, I'm sure.
Okay, let's aim for that.
Well, before we go, I wanted to ask you, as you know, this podcast is dedicated to how to lead a well-designed life, and I always love to hear from my guests, what for you, Philly, what does it mean to lead a well-designed life?
I think a well-designed life looks like taking care of yourself so that you can be the best person to interact with and help the people around you or the people that are important to you. I think of personal achievements and building personal relationships. Yeah. When I think of a totality of a life. And for me, obviously, like teaching and day-to-day, all of those things are important to me and I value them and they're part of my well-designed life right now. But in the grander scheme, I think when I look back on my career, with the rest of my life, I'll think about how I navigated through things and the relationships that I built.
Yeah. Well said. And I will say, as somebody who blissfully, although, we didn't get any choice, thanks Mom and Dad, and being sisters, just so happened that
it
way.
It wasn't always easy, listeners.
Notice how I didn't give her that chance for that
Sharon story. Used to be a lot different than she is now.
I've always been very zen, very calm, never lose my cool. I am going to give you a space to give a Sharon story if you want, but I'll honor my word. But I will say it has the way that you're talking about building relationships as a sibling, it's something that I feel really lucky that I get to be on this side of it because I definitely see that in you. So
thank you.
Yes, so thank you. And with that lovely compliment that I've given you, now I'll give you space to tell a Sharon story.
Well, I have many Sharon stories that I could tell, many positive and a few not as flattering. I'll give this one that's just short. My birthday is the day after Sharon's birthday in the calendar year. I'm 5 years younger. And I remember once being pretty young and asking, maybe 5 years old, we'll use that number five, and asking my mom, why, if Sharon's just one day older than me, why is she so much bigger than I am? Because I didn't grasp the concept of years and that she would be obviously older and bigger than I am. But to that end, I remember vividly being a child and having Sharon taunt me and tell me that my birthday was only the aftertaste of her birthday and it wasn't the main event. And one year when I was maybe turning 7 and Sharon would have been 12, is that right? 7 plus 5?
You got it, yeah.
Okay.
English majors.
My gift was, it was a pair of earrings, but wrapped in balled up loose leaf paper. And then when you uncrumpled the paper and saw the earrings on the paper, it said, I thought I might buy you a trash can, but I just gave you this piece of trash instead.
I did that?
Yeah. And that kind of speaks to what it was like to have your birthday just be the aftertaste of someone else's birthday.
Wow. I sound really awesome. But what I was going to say to that is, so as has been the theme of this past week where we've seen many of our siblings and our sister Maureen in particular was dropping these memories where I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about, that this thing that you and I did, or we were in the same room and I like don't remember these things. Although she says it, I'm like, oh yeah. But it's just not a memory that I was holding. I do not remember having done that crumpled up trash. But I do remember the afterthought, like, oh, that's the afterthought of my birthday. But that is, just to give full disclosure, I completely stole Dad's line on that. So,
what?
Yes, true story is, dad, whose birthday, as it turns out, is the afterthought of our brother's birthday. But our brother's due date was after dad's birthday. So he always talked about how he was like, well, I thought he would be born after me. And then his birthday would be the afterthought of mine. So that, kind of giving you a tough time is totally unoriginal. So when you tell it, I'm like, I'm a jerk and I'm unoriginal. But that crumpled up trash paper, that's like pure Sharon originality of being mean.
Yeah,
so
at least because it wasn't even like, wow, just feel bad that I gave you this piece of trash. I thought about buying you something else that you wouldn't want, and I couldn't even be bothered to do that.
But there were earrings in it, right?
Yeah, there were.
There were earrings that you loved that were really...
They were bright. Like fuchsia. If I was turning 7, then it was 1993, so imagine your fashions accordingly. But these dangly, like a metallic fuchsia circle with like a heart dangling off it.
Yeah, like a hoop with a heart dangling in the middle?
Not a full hoop, but like...
Okay, so like a circle and then like a heart dangling under the circle. Mm-hmm. All right, I got it. Ah, the 90s.
I'm sure they were cute.
I'm sure they were, because I was so awesome.
And a balled up piece of trash. She can tell you about, like, there is nothing stopping you and all that. But know that when she was younger, she was a pill.
Colin, please delete all of these comments from the podcast. No, we'll keep them in there. But, good. Well, thank you for joining. It has been a delight to have you on, stories and all.
Yes, I was feeling a little bit apprehensive about coming on as a guest, but I have had a lot of fun chatting with you, as always.
Yes, me too. So that's a wrap for today's interview. Thanks to Philly for joining me for this episode and to all of you for listening. If you want to see just how many tips Philly and I came up with brainstorming about transitions, head over to pointroadstudios.com/podcast and you'll see the full list there, along with all the show notes for today's episode. And in addition to the links to all the resources and things that we mentioned, you can also check out some fun photos of me and Philly through the years. So get excited about that. While you're on the site, look for the green subscribe button. And that if you link to us there, you're able to stay up to date on all the upcoming interviews and shows, all of our content aimed at spreading the design yourself spirit. And you can also follow along with what I'm up to over on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Just look for Point Road Studios, and that's point like a pencil point, road as in we're hitting the road on a road trip, and studios with an S at the end. As always, if you like what you heard on today's show, please help me get the word out about it. You could share this episode or the podcast with your communities, subscribe, or leave a written review over on Apple Music. So all of those things are meaningful, and I appreciate you taking a moment to do so. And thank you, thank you, thank you as ever for listening. I am wishing each of you a beautiful week. I hope you're enjoying, if you're listening the day this is released, the end of your Memorial Day weekend. And until next time, remember, there is nothing stopping you. So go on ahead and get after whatever it is that you really want.